The book of Ecclesiastes is the words of the preacher. And we saw this preacher was actually more literally a convener. He wanted to gather together people and he wanted to speak to people, everyone living under the sun, everyone living in this world, and speak to them about life. And his basic message was very simple. Don't chase what you can't grasp. There are people chasing wind. You can't hold on to the wind. You can't get it. But do cling onto what lasts. And he says, essentially, let me show you what is eternal amidst what doesn't last. So your question for you this morning, for me, what are you clinging to? What are you trying to hold on to? Can you take that through death? Now, the convener contrasts life under the sun, which is what everyone experiences, to life under heaven. And we're thinking last time briefly that he's got two methods. He's got the words of the wise like goad. So sometimes he just gets a big stick and he provokes us by showing how difficult things are and how much life is given over to frustration. But then he also has these nails firmly fixed. And there are these fixed points, truths about God and heaven that we can cling on to the whole of our lives. But sometimes we struggle with Ecclesiastes because Ecclesiastes is an Eastern book. So yes, there's a progression of thought, but there's also this thing that goes round and round. And if you're thinking, I've heard that before, then I'm sure Solomon would say, I know that, but have you got it yet? I've just given you another prick with the goads. Have you got that yet? Have you got that yet? And he's saying the same thing in different ways. Remember, he's asked the question in chapter 1, basically, what profit do we gain? What profit if we gain the whole world, as Christ would say, and lose our soul? And he's talked about vanity being frustrating. And he's taken us to the house of mourning. And he said that's where we can see what really matters, because that takes us from what lasts forever, from what goes. But even from the house of mourning, we saw last time that he said wisdom is not enough. You might be really wise, and Solomon was really wise, but it's not enough either to control life or to escape death. And if you look back at how our passage ended last time, he said in verse 11 of chapter 9, I saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favour to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. Even if you're wise, you're not going to escape death. Strong, whatever you are, you're not going to escape death. It's always going to happen. And Solomon at this point may get us to think, well, if wisdom's not enough, is it still good? Well, Solomon in our passage today says, it's not enough, but it is good. Look at chapter 9 and verse 13. I've also seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me. So Solomon's saying, don't get the idea just because wisdom's not enough, it won't get you to escape death, but it is good. And he's going to tell us this morning two ways that wisdom is good. And the first one is from chapter 9, verse 13, to chapter 10, verse 20. And he says, wisdom is practical under the sun. It is practical under the sun. And he gets, and when we think about under the sun, this is the experience that everyone has of life where things are frustrating. And he's being quite reflective. This is Solomon, we think, as an older man. Verse 13, he says, I have seen. And in chapter 10, verse 5, this is an evil I have seen under the sun. When you talk to an older person, and maybe you think today, well, I might class in that category, the older we get, often the more reflective we become. And we reflect on things we've seen through life. And that's what Solomon's doing. Now, as we come to this passage, you might be thinking, this is starting to look like the book of Proverbs. If you took chapter 10 out of Ecclesiastes and inserted it in the middle of Proverbs and just kind of edited out the the chapter references and smuggled it over to someone and said, I'm going to read to you from the book of Proverbs, I don't know how many people would spot that this chapter 10 should really be in the book of Ecclesiastes. If you just inserted it in Proverbs, you think it's similar. And it is. And what we need to remember is when we looked at Proverbs, Proverbs was gateway wisdom. Why were these Proverbs that were given? Well, it's a bit like the Royal Military Academy in Sandhurst. What happens in Sandhurst? Well, you get a load of young men who are vastly inexperienced in life, and you train them and you want to make leaders of them, and then you want to send them out with the ability to make independent, wise decisions in pressurized situations, and they need to think for themselves. That's what Proverbs was doing. It was taking the men from the provinces, or who were going to go into the provinces, train them up and send them out. They could live their lives because they hadn't got Solomon on speed dial. They hadn't got him on any dial because they hadn't got any phones. They'd got to think for themselves and apply practical biblical wisdom. And so Solomon in this section says wisdom is good. I'm talking about life under the sun. I'm talking about life with frustrations. And I'm going to tell you how to deal practically with four issues that are going to come up. War, that's chapter 9 verses 13 to 18. Error, that's chapter 10 verses 1 to 7. Unpredictability, that's chapter 10 verses 8 to 15. And instability, that's chapter 10 verses 16 to 20. As Solomon says, under the sun, it's going to be frustrating, but wisdom is practical. It's good because it's practical. So let's see verse 9, chapter 9, verses 13 to 18. Wisdom is good amidst war. And Solomon gives the example of a siege. Now, a siege can be quite threatening. In fact, Sennacherib, remember that man who came and besieged Jerusalem and Hezekiah was there, spoke in this proud way. As to Hezekiah the Jew, he didn't submit to my yoke. I laid siege to 46 of his strong cities. Himself I made prisoner in Jerusalem, his royal residence, like a bird in a cage. That's what he says. I've got him. And this is the example. There's a little city with few men in it. This could be Jerusalem under Hezekiah. And a great king, this could be Sennacherib, came against it and besieged it, building great siege works. And this is a classic example of tactics versus strategy. You know, your kind of tactics in the situation. The person doing the siege knows all about tactics. He's built his siege works. He's got him bottled up. But what's the big strategy? Well, you've got the wise man. And Solomon's saying there is value in wisdom in a time of war. And there's a poor man in verse 15. By his wisdom, he delivered the city. Now, Solomon doesn't say how he did it, whether he managed to make some argument with the person who was besieging, whether he managed to find out some deal he could make, whether he managed to introduce into the camp some disease so they had to withdraw. Whatever he did, he had some strategy that worked. And Solomon says it's good, but ironically, verse 15, it's forgotten. He sees it amidst the frustrations. Don't worry, it'll be forgotten, but it's still good. And what he's saying is, look, there's much good work going on behind the scenes. Look at verse 17. The words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler amongst fools. And if you go through human history, often the way to avert war has not been big pronouncements and gunboats. It has been clever, wise diplomacy behind the scenes. The words of the wise heard in quiet. The stuff that's not reported, not the shouting in verse 17. Wisdom, verse 18, is better than weapons of war. And you can look at many different times in history where that's been the case. And we can pray that we have a time when we have people who heed this wisdom. We need good diplomats. So what Solomon's saying is saying, look, wisdom is good amidst war. Solomon's not, his father, David, was brilliant, wasn't he, at war. Solomon lived in a time of peace. Perhaps one reason, humanly speaking, he lived in a time of peace was because he knew wisdom. Wisdom is good amidst war. But secondly, Solomon says, wisdom is good amidst error. And you can see that Solomon's flow of thought, because in verse 18 of chapter 9, Solomon said, one sinner destroys much good. So he's like, look, you can have all of this diplomacy sorted out, can't you? You can have all of this ceasefire agreed, and then you only need to have one particularly belligerent person who decides to set it all off again. And that's why he says in verse 10, dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So I don't know much about perfume, but I do know it's supposed to smell nice. And dead flies are not known for smelling nice. And this is the idea that you've got all of this nice, sweet-smelling wisdom, and somehow in this lovely perfume, you've got these stinking, rotting dead flies, which have completely wrecked the perfume, which was worth a lot and is now useless. And that's why he says, dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honour. So Solomon's saying, look, wisdom's undervalued and it can be spoiled, but he's saying within this, it is still good. It's still good. And he gives some examples amongst this, the spoiler of folly, wisdom is still good. Now, I wonder what you thought when you read verse 2. A wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. I think just about every time I've heard that one quoted, this person was smiling at me and making a point about British politics. Can I tell you conclusively, this verse has got absolutely nothing to do with politics. Okay? So whatever your political views, Ecclesiastes 10 verse 2 doesn't help you. If you're left-handed, you might not be so happy about this verse, because if you go back to, so I'm told I'm not an expert in Latin, but the word sinister comes from Latin meaning left hand. Oh dear, if you're left-handed. So you think about the sheep and the goats, sheep on the right, goats on the left. So this idea of the right and the left, we could translate it or paraphrase it this way: a wise man's heart leads him aright, and the fool's heart leads him astray. That's the point. He's saying wisdom is good. It's leading you on the right way. And he's saying, look, in verse 3, it's even seen in how someone's general bearing. And possibly we could see that illustrated. You know, sometimes you have young men who are trying to look really tough, who've got this kind of jaunty walk, and you think, that's not fooling anyone. You might sometimes see something like that. But he goes on, remember, wisdom's good amongst error. This is the idea that you've got this spoiler of the fly in the ointment. And he says in verse 4, a wise man waits for the fit of rage to blow over. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offences to rest. So I think I mentioned to some of you recently, I was interested in watching the interviews of the evangelical Republican speaker being asked, how do you deal with a mercurial boss like Trump, who kind of mood goes up and down, and how do you predict him? And he said, I take him seriously, but not literally. That's this kind of sense here, that if someone dealing with Trump, like Mike Johnson, was kind of popping off every time he popped off, it wouldn't last very long. And he just says, the ruler rises against you, I don't leave my place, remain calm, and it'll lay great offences to rest. He's saying, look, there's error going on, but if you're wise, it's still good. And then Solomon gives a bad example. And he says, well, what happens when it doesn't work? There's an evil I've seen under the sun, as it were an error proceeding from a ruler. Folly is set in many high places, and the rich sit in a low place. And he's basically saying, look, what do we do when we've got fools ruling us? And you'll know that media hosts love to get government ministers, and they announce a policy, and the media host just has his like calculator in front of him and starts asking them about maths. You might remember examples. How many police officers can you get for this money? And they're making the person look completely foolish, rightly or wrongly. But this is what Solomon's saying. I've seen evil. I've seen fools in charge. I've seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the grounds like slaves. And really what all this section that Solomon is saying, look, there's all this error going on, but you want to be the man in the centre of this thing in verse 4, keeping your head, keeping calm. The fly's going to be in the ointment. There's going to be problems. We're life under the sun. He said, I've seen it. There's evil. It's going to go. There's going to be bad things, but you need to be the one to keep your head. There's the pull of sin and grace. Grace pulls in one direction. Sin pulls down. But he says, keep your head. Stay calm amidst the error of this world. He's a realist, Solomon. Wisdom is good amidst error. So we've seen wisdom is good amidst war, wisdom is good amidst error. And following this theme on from verses 8 to 15, he says more generally, wisdom is good amidst unpredictability. So at a basic level, from verses 8 to 11, there's two points that are being made. Life is unpredictable. This is all these pictures he has in verse 8 and 9. So you dig a pit, and then you fall in it. This is the health and safety executive speaking. You try and break through a wall, and there's a snake. You've got bitten. You're quarrying stone. Health and safety executive says, get your hat on. You're going to be hurt by it. You're splitting logs. Get your face protector, get your visor on before your splinters hit you in the eye. So life's unpredictable, he's saying, but wisdom helps, verse 10. The iron is blunt and one doesn't sharpen the edge. He must use more strength. Sharpen your tools. Wisdom helps you to succeed. So that's a basic level. But there seems to be going on in this section too a theme that Solomon is drawing. So if you go back to verse 4, he's got this idea of the ruler who's got a bit of a temper and who's rising against you. And you use soothing words. And this could be linked to verse 11, the serpent who bites before it's charmed. And this also, because the snake comes again in verse 8, about the one who bites, the one who breaks through the wall. So there could be a deeper level that Solomon's basically saying, look, some of this unpredictable is you might get bitten by the snake, which could be a royal person. So you need to calm him down, particularly in your speech. The charmer, it seems, from the context, is he's not just giving advice about snake charming, because look what he goes on to in verse 12. The charming seems to be to do with words. Remember, Proverbs are not just kind of randomly arranged. They're put together in sequence. He's saying, be wise at this time of unpredictability in your speech. And he's contrasting the wise man's mouth and the foolish man's mouth. And by verse 14, he says, a fool multiplies words. And that's why he's already said in verse 13, his talk is foolishness and is madness. And the fool, verse 15, thinks he's in control. The toil of a fool wearies him. He doesn't know the way to the city. The fool thinks he's in control, but the wise knows he's not. He's just got his words that need to be under control, limited, to get through this time of unpredictability. In other words, what can make us ready for unpredictability? Solomon would say wisdom to handle how to respond. So wisdom good amidst war, wisdom good amidst error, wisdom good amidst unpredictability. And finally in this section, wisdom is good amidst instability. Now Solomon lived And he lived through some very unstable times growing up. Do you remember all those times when people were trying to take over David's throne? Adonijah said he was going to be king. And Solomon says, you need to have a king who's in control. Woe to you, O land, verse 16, when your king is a child. Think of the time, this verse is remember the time of our Edward VI, the boy king after Henry. And the battle, who was going to be his Lord Protector, who was going to be in control? Could they marry their son to Lady Jane Grey? It was an unstable time, which led to Mary and led to tragedy. Solomon says, this is woe if you've got a child in charge, because they haven't got the power to keep control. Therefore, verse 17, you want a king who's the son of the nobility. You want to have someone with a clear claim to the throne in those days, that there's not all of the debate, should he be king or should he be not? And you want to make sure that your princes aren't drunken fools. Because in verse 17, they seem to be drinking, and in verse 18, they've not spotted that they need to be repairing their house and the roof's caved in. They've been partying, not repairing what they should have been doing. And therefore, Solomon is saying, look, the state can be unstable. Do we not know that in our day? The state can be unstable. And so Solomon says, take care, even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some wind creature tell the matter. Possibly the source of our little phrase, a little bird told me. And I know someone who worked in a large organization, and the leader of this organization was very clear. One of his mantras was, don't say something in private you wouldn't in public. Because I think this man was worried he'd be quoted. So if his policy in this big organization, don't say something in private you wouldn't in public, well, you can quote me, because I'm basically saying whatever I'm saying as if it could be retweeted. I think this is a bit before tweets, but you could be sent out. So Solomon has given almost an interlude of the practicality of wisdom getting through this world. He's very realistic about the problems of this world. There's war. That'll cause problems. There's error. That's going to cause problems. There's unpredictability. That's going to cause problems. There's instability. That's going to cause problems. And he says, wisdom is good. It's going to practically help you through choosing your words carefully, keeping you calm when other people are not keeping their calm, and it will help you through these days. And we can say, thank you, Solomon, because we live in unstable and unpredictable days. We live in days when there's war. We live in days when there's all sorts of problems. And he'll say, keep calm, keep the big picture, watch your words. But you say, Solomon, have you got anything more to us? Because just getting through this world a bit better is not that amazing. But more briefly, let's now look at when Solomon says, wisdom is good with the priorities under heaven. And Solomon now lifts us up and he takes us to the eternal perspective. In verse 11, chapter 11, verse 1, it says, cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. And his basic point here is our priority under heaven is to think long term. I mentioned this verse recently in another context. There's three possibilities here. It could be a charitable picture. So you throw your goods liberally, you're giving liberally to charity on waters that are going to run away, because you're just thinking of others. It could be a commercial picture. It could be casting things on ships, knowing that your ships could get sunk. That's quite topical these days, isn't it? You can invest in shipping. Or it could be an agricultural picture. Sow your seed, even on marshy ground, it could grow well, but it might not. But the idea is that we're not just hoarding things for ourselves. We're investing for the long term. You're not giving charitably to get yourself rich. You're investing long term in shipping. You're thinking long term. And Solomon says, you need patience. It'll take many days. And you need faith to think that you will find it. And we need to be patient, awaiting God's timing for our investment in our time and resource. But and Solomon puts this in context because he says, you've got to have this long-term perspective. You've got to have this long-term picture of finding something after many days, because there's things you just don't know. Look at verse 2. You don't know what disasters are going to happen. So if you were super invested in shipping, I don't know if anyone here is playing the stock market, and suddenly, boom, the Strait of Hormuz closes, you're like, oops, that's not looking good. And so Solomon's saying, give a portion to 7 or even to 8. In other words, invest in a huge amount of things to distribute your risk. You just don't know. Other things you don't know, verse 5. You don't understand, and particularly in those days, their medical knowledge was much more limited. I mean, how does a child grow in the womb? I mean, even today we know it far better than we've ever known it, but there's still a wonder, isn't there, how a child grows. It's amazing. Wonderful. And he says in verse 6, you don't know what's going to prosper, this or that. There's things that you just don't know. You've got limits. And you're not in control. Look at verses 3 and 4, the bit in the middle. So the bit on the outside has said, you don't know what's going to happen. And the bit in the middle says, you're not in control. Like the clouds. I mean, you know they're going to empty themselves of water, but that knowledge doesn't necessarily help you as you stand out there and go, I know it's going to rain, and I haven't got my coat. Right, I'm going to get wet. You say, well, that doesn't knowledge. You're not in control. What about the tree? It's going to fall over. You're not in control. What about the wind? Verse 4. If you're just waiting to try and predict the wind, you're never going to sow because you can't control these things. So what is his conclusion in verse 6? He's saying, in the morning sow your seed, and in the evening withhold not your hand. In other words, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Do it with your might. You've got this priority under heaven. You're going to think long term. There's lots of things you don't know, so you just need to get on with it. And finally, in verse 7 and 8, he says, enjoy it, because it's brief. Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. So Solomon shows why the people of this age have some point about life, but similarly, don't get it. So when I say people have some point, those people who think more long term in this life, there are people who are unbelievers who've worked out that they need to remain calm, use their words carefully, and work hard, aren't there? And they can get on very well in life. So there's a common grace aspect to the things that Solomon has been saying to us. But it's verse 8 where Solomon shows why that's inadequate. Let him remember the days of darkness will be many. There are people in this world who want to keep calm, work hard, and enjoy life. But they don't have the answer to the days of darkness. And Solomon is wanting us to think about casting our bread upon the water, for you will find it after many days. When do we find it? When does our boat come in? Well, isn't this where Jesus was at in the parable of the talents? We're given each of us, if we're believers, talents, opportunities for service. And after many days, we're going to come before God. And he is going to deal with us according to how we've responded to him. The days of darkness will be many. And so the question for each of us today is, we're living our lives and we're not serving ourselves, but we're serving a different master. Are we those who are casting our bread upon the waters with that faith in him that we will find it over many days? If we show restraint, we show wisdom, we work hard, we accept the instability of a fallen world and the unpredictability of the fallen world and live for God, are we those who are distinctively those men and women of faith and trusting that when our boat comes in, it's God who will bring it in and he will reward us, each of us, according to our work? In other words, we have a higher master. So we can, verse 8, if, he says, Solomon, if you live many years, rejoice in them all. They're a gift from God. Accept every day that we have as a gift from God, with the understanding, not like the world who says, just enjoy it for as long as we can. We say, rejoice and give thanks, but look up to God on his understanding. The days are a gift, and he's given us the ability to make sense of this messed up, fallen world. So let's take these prods, these goads, but get those nails firmly fixed so we can hang on to them and have those points of stability. As we're living in an unstable world, if you're a believer today, you should be thinking, I can live. There's things I don't understand. There's things that are unstable. But I know this is the way life is because sin is ravaging this world. I expect that. But I know God. May I live to serve him. May we as believers talk to each other how we can serve our God, remaining calm, speaking wisely, working hard in this fallen world, but working ultimately for him and not for ourselves. Amen.